Finally, it is Friday. I'm Jared Cohen, filling in for Brad Sesmat today on Sports360AZ.com. It's been a long, hot week. If you're here in the Valley, if you're up in the White Mountains listening, we all envy you. And it reminds me, it's the top stories of the day, brought to you by the Honda Resort and Casino up there in the White Mountains, where everyone in the Valley should be going this weekend because it is going to be really hot. It's a great time, great stuff to do up there. Get out there, hit the tables, hit the slots. The Honda Resort and Casino has been with us, Sports360AZ.com, since day one. Again, my name is Jared Cohen. Work with Brad, Sports360AZ.com. Brad is out today taking his daughter to college. Kid number three gets a full-ride scholarship to play soccer in Chicago. They're taking her up there, the first of the Sesmat family to be heading out of state for college, so this one feels a little bit different. So our thoughts are out there in what will be probably a very emotional weekend for the big guy. But what we have behind the glass, Jordan Hamm continues to hold it down in the producer chair, while Eric Sorensen is still in Hawaii, tough life. And Jared Nielsen, who has a spectacular first name, if I must say so myself, continues to keep us in check. And we've got them. And as mentioned, the top stories brought to you by the Honda Resort and Casino. And the top stories are the Diamondbacks. And before we get into the Diamondbacks, we're going to be joined by ASUDevils.com publisher Chris Cartman. We're going to be talking ASU football and college football in general as camps begin today for college football for both ASU and U of A. High school camps also started earlier this week. We can talk a little recruiting with Chris, and also the Cardinals have started. Won't talk as much Cardinals with him, but he will be joining us during this segment at some point. He's on his way here now. We'll talk to him for a couple segments about all things college football. Let's now get into the trade deadline that ended yesterday at 1 p.m. Arizona time. Technically, it's not over because after the trade deadline, you could still make weird roundabout ways of trades. It's kind of like baseball's designating a player for assignment, aka they're releasing them. I don't understand the fancy verbiage. Basically, that's what happens. The trade deadline isn't necessarily the trade deadline. There's still a lot of things that can happen. The Diamondbacks still could be involved in a lot more trades going forward. But the big deals that did go down at the end of the day, at the end of the trade deadline yesterday, two players were dealt. Gerardo Parra, a fan favorite. I have my thoughts about him that I'll get into in a moment. And also Martin Prado. The Prado era ended before it even started in Arizona. Only spent about a year and a half with the team. He was dealt to the New York Yankees. Some of the players and prospects they got in return, I like some of them. I'm really intrigued by some of them. I do a lot of work on Sports360AZ.com centered around Diamondback prospects. That's one of the things that I find the most interesting around the team. We know what the team looks like on the field presently. We root for the team. We're fans of the team. We pull for them throughout the year. But especially with baseball, I like to look to see who's waiting in the wings and the prospects involved. I blog about the top 20 prospects each and every week, their progression throughout the season, and some different notes about them. And they really added a few very good players that'll be immediately plugged into the top 20 prospects. Let's get into Gerardo Parra, okay? I got a lot of tweets in response to a tweet that I sent out after the trade was made. I believe that he's a fan favorite. It's sad to see a fan favorite go, but he is one of the main reasons for the disappointing 2014 season for the Diamondbacks. No, he's not the only reason. Trevor Cahill's on that list. Brandon McCarthy is on that list. He's shipped to the Yankees. Martin Prado, also shipped to the Yankees, is a large reason for that. Gerardo Parra, after last season, cemented himself as an everyday player. He said going into 2013 that his goal was to have 500 at-bats in a season. He felt that he has put in the work for that. He felt that he has put in the time to be an everyday starter and to have that many at-bats. And he got that opportunity last year and he took advantage. Now he didn't take that and run with it. He got the opportunity. He didn't run with it in 2014, and it went back to the 2012 and beyond version of Gerardo Parra, where they couldn't keep him out on the field every day because of mistakes. He's got a great arm. He makes great plays in the field, but he also makes a lot of mistakes, and he is not very diligent in the plate when he is hitting. He strikes out far too often for a player that should be hitting in the leadoff spot, doesn't draw very many walks. he tries to go for the long ball a little bit too often, and he just was not consistent. And that is a problem with a player of that caliber. Like I said, a player that needs to be a leadoff type hitter. You don't have to be a base stealer to be a leadoff guy, but you need to draw more walks, and you do need to be more consistent. And they could not keep him in the lineup every day. David Peralta was outperforming him. Ender Inciarte was outperforming him. AJ Pollock was the best outfielder on this roster before he got hurt, and that includes Mark Trumbo. And even Martin Prado, when they would include him and put him in the outfield, AJ Pollock was better than that. Gerardo Parra was supposed to be the guy, and he wasn't. And he's traded. And there are fans out there that are saying, what are they thinking trading Gerardo Parra? Well, guess what? What were they thinking when they signed Eric Burns to a long-term deal? It was a huge mistake. Eric Burns was one of the biggest fan favorites that the Diamondbacks have ever had. And the fan pressure that came with Eric Burns to keeping him as a Diamondback is what resulted in the Diamondbacks making one of the worst contracts they've had in their franchise's history. I'm not comparing Gerardo Parra to Eric Burns. Two very different players. Both brought very different things to the table. But Gerardo Parra, similarly, a fan favorite, and isn't a guy that they should have kept around just for that reason. He is not a player that has a high ceiling. We've seen his ceiling. We saw that last season. And was it very productive? Yes. And was it very good for the team? Yes. And when he is playing well, the Diamondbacks are a different team. The problem is, him playing well is few and far between and didn't happen nearly as often as it needed to. I think the Diamondbacks made a very good trade and dealing him, because there's only so much you can get in return for a guy like Gerardo Parra, because I mentioned he has a ceiling and he's hit it. But they were able to get a guy that's instantly a top 10 prospect in their organization. A guy who's an outfielder for the Brewers, a former second round pick, and someone that is going to be someone that we keep an eye on. His name is Mitch Hangier. H-A-N-G-I-E-R, sorry if I butchered that, a double-A player, and he's a guy with some raw power, a quick bat, good hand speed, and is someone that has really done a great job since he joined the Brewers program 3 years ago. Scouts have said that they thought Hangier could be a quick-moving college bat. He came from Cal Poly in 2012, and so far he's proved them right. He's skyrocketed up the food chain, up the farm system, and should do the same with the Diamondbacks organization, most likely getting a start in Mobile. Let's go to some of the sound from yesterday. Tony La Russa, Kevin Towers, they spoke to the media after the trade deadline was over. Here's what he had to say about Mitch Hangier and the outfielder they got in return for Gerardo Parra.
Kind of profiles probably more of a corner outfielder, although he has played center, offensive player. Speed's probably the lowest grade that we have on him, but defender with a plus arm, plus power, plus hitter. Guy that will probably go to double-A for us in Mobile, but a corner outfielder that we think could be a 5 or 6 hole type hitter here in the very near future.
And I'm sorry, I mentioned that he was a second-round pick. In fact, he was a supplemental first-round pick, 38th overall. So the Diamondbacks add another first-round talent to their farm system that I like right off the bat. Gerardo Parra was not a first-round pick or a former first-round pick and didn't have that upside. Yes, it's sad to see him go, but you get a player that has much more upside and brings different things to the table. It helps the farm system. You're not winning now. I like the move there. They also received left-handed bat Anthony Bando in the left-handed pitcher, I should say, Anthony Bando. He's someone to keep an eye on. Probably he spent his time. He's a little bit more versatile, spent some time as a starter as well as a reliever. Here's what Kevin Towers had to say about Bando.
We got a left-handed pitcher in Banda who is a projectable left-hander, 90 to 92 mile an hour fastball, plus changeup, breaking ball in the making, but a guy that our scouts felt, even though it's probably a couple of years away, chance to be a middle of the rotation, maybe better. He's 20 years old. But somebody who's athletic, good pitcher's body. We think the fastball is going to project that even more it's at now.
And there's Kevin Towers about Anthony Bando. Quick to move this thing along really quickly, Martin Prado, also the player traded. Everyone's saying, man, I look at that Justin Upton deal and I see this deal and I just can't get over how terrible that trade was. I personally was not a fan of that trade whatsoever when they made it. I was a Martin Prado fan. I'm a fantasy baseball guy, just like Jordy Ham is over here. We like to bring out our nerdism quite a bit when we're with each other talking fantasy baseball. I know Martin Prado because I had him on the fantasy squad, and I knew the different things he brought to the table, and I knew why he was such a huge fan favorite in Atlanta for all those years because of how versatile he was in the field defensively and the different things he could do with the bat, a 300 hitter. A gap hitter, a guy that could hit occasional home run, and a guy that's great with runners in scoring position. Didn't see any of that in a Diamondback uniform, just to put it bluntly, and it's unfortunate. Now, the Diamondbacks did get a great player in return for that Justin Upton deal. They have a guy named Brandon Drury, who just so happened today got called up to AA from Visalia. He's a guy that leads the farm system in hits and RBIs and is second in home runs at 19 home runs, 80 RBIs, and leads this farm system in hits. The only problem I have with that is he wasn't the main piece of that trade. Martin Prado was. Randall Delgado was. You traded Justin Upton for two guys that you really have no place for now. It was a terrible trade to begin with. But in return, they get a guy named Pete O'Brien, who has a lot of power. 33 home runs this season in the minor league system for the Yankees, and a much needed depth addition at catcher in the farm system, because you never know when Miguel Montero's days will be over. It's a guy that you can instantly plug in. Striker Trahan, a former first-round pick of the Diamondbacks, was moved from catcher to the outfield, so he's no longer someone to think about as the future replacement for Miguel Montero. O'Brien is, and here's what Kevin Towers had to say about him.
I think he's kind of like Trumbo, he's like Goldie. In the way that the power, you know, he's going to hit home runs in pretty much any ballpark you put him in. Probably more pull power now, but we think he's going to hit for an average. We think he's going to drive in runs, and our scouts believe that he could be an offensive catcher or an offensive catcher behind the plate.
And there's Kevin Towers. And quickly, before we call it quits for this segment, here's Tony La Russa. And a lot of people wondering what his role is going to be like, what Kevin Towers' role was going to be like amongst all these trades and the roster formation. Tony La Russa's overall thoughts and evaluation on how the Diamondbacks did prior to the trade deadline yesterday.
You know, my job as I come here is to evaluate this, our organization, but also evaluate the big league club. And for us to get better, there's some priorities. And then you take some of the areas of strength, and maybe you deal from them to get to something else. And I know Kevin said it, so has I think Derek. Pitching, especially with some of the injuries they've had, that's a big priority. So I've been impressed.
He sounds very impressed, doesn't he? Tony La Russa there. Let's step aside. We've got so much more here on the Brad Sesmatch Show today. We're going to switch gears, talk a lot more college football. Camp starts today for both ASU and U of A. Chris Cartman is going to join us in studio to talk all about it here on Sports360AZ.com, White Mountain Radio, and, of course, Twitter. Like Brad likes to say, you can follow us at Sports360AZ. You can follow me at Jared_Sports360. More with college football with Chris Cartman after the break.
For original, in-depth Arizona sports news you care about, follow us on Twitter at Sports360AZ.
Sports360AZ.com, Jared Cohen filling in for Brad Sesmat today on the show. It's time to talk college football. I've been wanting to talk college football for a really long time, and finally camp opens up. It's here. I got pumped talking about it at Pac-12 Media Day last week, and now camps have begun. We could actually dive into this a little bit further. And happy to be joined in studio now, even though it was an adventure to get here. Rivals.com, ASUDevils.com, Chris Cartman joins us. Chris, thank you so much for taking time out of what's a busy day for you as camp begins, but everyone's pretty pumped.
Yeah, my pleasure to be here. It seems like camp gets earlier and earlier every year,
right?
With the earlier starts. August 1st is the earliest I can remember, but I was out there this morning at ASU for the veteran practices. They split it up with veterans first, and then the newcomers will practice in the evening. Todd Graham, we know a little bit about what he has offensively, but the defense is going to be the real question mark, and that's something we're closely following.
Yeah, no question. And you wrote about that. Post just went up this morning on sports360az.com. ASU 360 with Chris Cartman talks about the defense, your first edition of the 2014 season for that column that I look forward to personally every week. Let's talk about the defense. What did you mention in the post? What are you looking at now that camp starts? about this defense because there's a lot of turnover. Everyone knows it. That means players need to step up.
So Todd Graham has such an aggressive style. You know that he's going to be going for opposing quarterbacks. He said as much. We're not really going to change what we do in that respect. But the problem is now you have to replace Will Sutton, two-time Pac-12 Defensive Player of the Year. You have to replace Carl Bradford. The two of those guys combined for more sacks and tackles for loss than anybody in the country over the last 2 years or going into the last season. And they don't really have great options as far as, like, attack guys along their defensive front. There's a few different guys that they're looking at the devil backer position, which is a hybrid end or a linebacker type of a role. Chance Cox, everybody knows about him locally. He's one of the more high-profile local guys that's come out of the ranks in recent years out of the Upper Rim country. But he really had a slow adjustment to ASU, Jared. I think he's a ways away from being able to be a counted-on player at this level. And then you have Ami Latu is the other option at devil there. Played very sparingly last year. So those are two unknown guys. Actually, this morning they looked for the very first time at Marcus Washington, who's bounced around from running back to tight end defense at spur last year a little bit. Now he's watching Chance Cox, and he looks a little bit bigger. He's a good athlete. Maybe they can put him in that type of a role. Antonio Longino's another guy, maybe, but they have him at linebacker. And then at that three technique position, which they call Tiger, they have a couple options.
And that was Will's role last year,
yeah,
right?
That's where Will played. Demetrius Cherry is a guy who gained a lot of weight but wasn't really conditioned for it in the spring. We'll see how he evolves. They didn't get two junior college transfers.
I was just going to allude to those, Caldwell and Stuckey.
Yeah, and especially Dalvin Stuckey was expected to be a big impact guy. He was a number one rated junior college defensive tackle in the country. So now we're going to have to see if a couple of these true freshman guys can step up. I think Connor Humphreys has a really good chance. He's the highest profile high school recruit that ASU got in the class. He's very versatile, and he's much more skilled than your typical freshman. They also have Tayshaun Smallwood, so we'll see what happens with those guys.
And the secondary is also a point of interest because you lose Osahan Irabor and Robert Nelson, the depth, just experience, it lacks there. Are there players that are stepping up that you have your eye on that could be breakout players? Because I know Carrington is back. He's a guy that he's gotten my attention as someone to really step into that role.
Yeah, you alluded to Pac-12 Media Day. What I found really interesting from that was Todd Graham said he thinks the team can be more athletic and maybe even better on the back end, meaning in the secondary, despite the fact that they have three all-conference players who have now moved on. We know Demaryius Randall's a great player at safety, but the cornerbacks are very uncertain. Now, we saw Quishy Brown for the first time this morning. He's a junior college transfer from Grossmont in the San Diego area. The kid is physically an imposing specimen. He's 6 foot, every bit of 185, maybe 190 pounds, just jacked. I think they have very high expectations for him. He's been a guy that you heard a lot of buzz about in the offseason. And then there's a few other options. Marcus Ball is a guy who's been talked about quite a bit over the last couple years. He's big framed, moves well, very high and tangible guy. He's had some medical issues in the offseason they're trying to get resolved, but he was out there in a green shirt today at safety. They do have some players. Lloyd Carrington is probably going to step up and fill a starting role at cornerback. And I think there's a couple other guys, but that is an unknown. I think they're going to be more athletic, probably, but I don't know if they're going to be quite as good.
Chris Cartman from ASUDevils.com joining us on day one of training camp for Arizona State leading up to their 2014 season. Defense all over the map on things to keep an eye out for, but there are areas on offense that are worth taking a look at, even though it's a lot more set in stone that is with the defense. And one of them is the tight end position. Demarye Nelson seems to be the guy that should be the one to fill Chris Coyle's large shoes. And that is a guy that's almost irreplaceable. But is Nelson fit to take over that role? And are there other players that you anticipate trying to step up as well?
Nelson is such an athletic specimen. He actually is more versatile than Coyle. it's just that Coyle was so good at what he did at maximizing his potential. Very good blocker for an undersized guy, great hands, pass catcher.
You got him on an NFL roster.
Exactly. Did everything that he needed to do to maximize his opportunity. So Nelson, he's a guy that you can actually hand the ball off to. You can flex him out. You can have him as an inline guy. The thing that ASU wants to be able to do, though, Jared, is they want to be able to use two tight end formations quite a bit. What we saw when Nelson was banged up at the end of last season and Marion Grice was also hurt, they had to go with a lot of just three receiver formations, four receiver formations. They didn't have the two tight ends or two running back looks. And that's what provides the diversity that's hard for them to really sort of figure out as far as defenses go. So I think he's gonna be a solid player. Grant Martinez is really the guy that I think is going to be a big-time guy once he gets going.
Yeah, and he was great in high school. Notre Dame prep. He was absolutely fantastic. Was so much fun to watch him, and I'm excited to see how it translates.
Great hands, pass catcher, runs good routes. I think his main thing was just adding a lot of size and strength because they need a bigger option to be an inline guy next to Demaria Nelson when he's in that three-back role. There's a true freshman, actually, who has a really good chance named Brandon Landman of playing. He's actually the biggest tight end on the roster at about 6'5", 245, even though he's a true freshman.
That is a perfect segue for my next question. I wanted to talk about true freshmen, and how many, if any, look to make a very immediate impact on this team this season?
Offense, it's going to be very few, almost none. You might have one or two guys. Kalen Balaj is a bigger running back, high-profile recruit out of Colorado that a lot of ASU fans who follow recruiting were really excited to see ASU get. And that's probably about it. They have a couple junior college transfers who are going to probably play right away in a big way. Eric Lauderdale, Deshavon Hayes, skill guys, receiver, running back sort of guys who are great athletes. On the defensive side, there's a lot more opportunity for playing time as true freshmen. I mentioned Connor Humphreys earlier, Tayshawn Smallwood. Those are linemen who could play right away. You have Christian Sam, who's a spur, which is a hybrid safety linebacker out of Texas. He's got a chance to impact the depth chart pretty quickly. And then there's a couple defensive backs we'll be watching as well.
And do you see guys like a Tyler Wiley and Manny Wilkins, you see those guys end up ultimately redshirting this season?
I would say that either Tyler Wiley or Jalen Harvey, one of them might have a chance to see playing time. It really depends on how the other wide receivers really step up that are already on the roster, because you have a few guys who are talented. They just haven't brought it consistently. Those are both high-impact guys as far as like the recruiting rankings and everything go. And they're physically prepared, especially Jalen Harvey, I would say, is very physically prepared to play at this level. So I definitely could see one of those guys etching out a smaller role. But you know, we'll kind of have to keep an eye on that as well.
Now, I'm going to put you on the spot a little bit.
Sure.
I want to give us a player that no one knows about right now that will be a household name. Chris Young was that guy not so long ago. That's the first person that came to my mind. That was 2 years ago, not last season. Give us a future household name on this ASU team that right now nobody knows about.
Well, I would say going back to Quishy Brown, I really expect that he's going to be an impact addition. They need another cornerback. He's physically prepared. He has great film. He's a hitter. All those kinds of things. Among guys who are returning players, I would probably say Viliami Latu has a chance to make a big impact. And then also Viliami Mokiola. They call him Layu Mokiola. Probably him in
particular. How many times do you practice that name?
Yeah, I mean,
you get it right.
It's frustrating because there's like three Latus and then two Viliamis, so you got to watch yourself. But I think Mokiola is probably the strongest guy on the defense pound for pound. He's been banged up a little bit. He hasn't really had a chance to flourish. They moved him to spur from safety, and I think now that's really his home, and he can be a much better player than they had last year at that position, I think.
You heard it first. That's Chris Cartman, ASUDevils.com, joining us in studio for a couple segments, talking ASU football. Going to talk a little more college football next segment. Sticking with the ASU on the offensive side, no DJ Foster is the premier back now. Two-part question. Can he handle the reps? He's still a smaller guy, even though he has put on crazy size since he was at Saguaro. It's been like a whole nother person, but he's still not the biggest framed player. Can he take the hits of an every-down back? And with that in question, are you going to see a race for that number two back in this camp that should get a lot of reps so they could split him out like he was doing with Marion Grice? That's Foster I'm talking about.
Right. Well, I think it's a great question. And in fact, that's something that we've been really talking about on the site quite a bit of late, because you just don't know about DJ Foster. He's had a couple concussions in the past. He's been banged up a little bit and been limited in practice as a result. In high school, obviously, he was a major workhorse back and put up all kind of records and
10 touchdown games.
Exactly, and that you can only do that if you're playing almost every snap. But and he has gained two. He's up 200 pounds now, which is crazy because he used to weigh about 185 when he got to ASU. So he's up 15 pounds of good muscle. Looks great. He had the fastest shuttle time in the history of Sean Griswold, who's been with Todd Graham for like 7-8 years now. So he's an explosive, athletic guy. Is he going to be durable enough? I really don't know the answer. I think probably he'll handle the role well. But yes, they're going to want to keep other guys blending in there. Deshaun Hayes is a guy who can play the slot role or at running back. And then you also have Kalen Ballage, who's a bigger change of pace sort of a guy. I think those guys are going to get playing time.
So you think that'll be kind of a story within the story? The race for the number two back could be a pretty important race in this camp.
For sure. And don't count out DeAndre Lewis.
He's still there. Right?
He looks all the way back physically. For him, it's a matter of consistently catching the ball out of the backfield and being a better blocker when they have Max protecting.
Chris Cartman's going to join us for one more segment here on the Brad Sesmatch Show. Jared Cohen filling in for Brad on a Friday. Lots more college football to talk about. We're going to get into a little bit more of the Pac-12 and the college football landscape coming up next. Don't go anywhere.
For unique angles, content, and guests, check out our podcast center available 24/7, 365 at sports360az.com.
Welcome back into the Brad Sesmatch Show. Jared Cohen filling in for Brad on this Friday. Brad sending his young child off to college, and I wouldn't know what that's like. I got a long ways to go before I do that, but it's a weekend with a heavy heart for Brad, but I'm sure he's very excited. He's in Chicago sending his daughter Brenna off to play college soccer. Very exciting for her. So instead, I'm filling in on this Friday. Got a lot of great stuff to talk about. We're talking a lot of football today. We're going to switch gears to the biggest story in town this weekend. That is the Arizona Rattlers, the number one seed in the Western Conference, going into the playoffs, round number one, and they're going to be going off 3 p.m. kickoff from Auction India Community Field on Sunday in downtown Phoenix. And right now we're lucky enough to be joined by the president of the club, Joe Windham. Joe, thank you so much for joining us. Let's just talk about the excitement. Another great season and another run in the playoffs. Look to make it a three-peat in the AFL.
Hey, Jared, thanks for having us on. But we've been very fortunate the last few years. We've had a pretty good run. It's been a little bit exhausting, though.
I'm sure.
81 games in 4 years is a lot of games. But the guys are up for it, and you know, it's what we always play for is to get into the playoffs, and here we are, ready to go.
Now, a lot has been said over the years of the fact that you guys and Coach Guy like to practice outside no matter what, no matter the heat, no matter what. With all these games that you guys have played, having to practice and hydrate and take care of the bodies as much as needs to be done when you're practicing outside, do you think that really helps come playoff time?
You know, I mean, I think so. I mean, you know, if you talk to boxers and things like that, they all do high altitude training, you know, so they can come down here and have gas at the end. And, we've definitely seen, where we can excel in the fourth quarter, and we're playing as hard in the fourth quarter as we are in the first. And, I think it gets them mentally ready as well as physically ready. And so if you can train in extreme conditions and play in something that's a little less, I think it's, you know, definitely an advantage.
Now, the Rattlers are in a quest now of being in their fourth straight Arena Bowl. There's a lot that has to be done before that happens, but what you guys have done in the front office and what Coach Kevin Guy has done, not only from coaching on the sidelines, but as a general manager, you guys are the model for arena football these days. And can you just talk about what Coach Guy has been able to bring to this team, not just from a coaching standpoint, but from a formula standpoint? I have a friend of mine that's trained with the Rattlers over the years in training camp and whatnot, hasn't ended up on the roster, but he called Coach Guy a mad scientist as it pertains to arena football. What do you see from your standpoint on what he's been able to do and in creating this behemoth that is the Rattlers in this league?
Yeah, I mean, I think we were definitely fortunate, coming into this organization with him already at the helm, and with Ron's vision, Ron Church, the owner, and him bringing me in. We all have the same vision, and we're all very meticulous and you know, very hands-on. And the thing about Kevin is, you know, I've described him this way. You know, everybody, you know, they use the cliche that, you know, he leaves no stone unturned. And my cliche for Kevin is he leaves no grain of sand unturned. and it's really true. I mean, he is thinking, you know, 6 different scenarios, 14 moves ahead. I mean, you know, mad scientist is probably not even strong enough to describe him. I mean, it's on his mind 24/7, and it's every aspect of the game and the business. I mean, he's been, you know, a great person. He's been in this league for a long time, and I've bounced a lot of ideas off of him. He's given us a lot of ideas, you know, in the front office and of what's worked in the past and what hasn't worked. And, you know, and the thing about all of us here is we don't have such a big ego that, you know, we think we have to do it, you know, our way. If there's a way that works, you know, we're going to go with that. And, you know, so Kevin's over there, and he's got the guys mentally, you know, tough. We've got, you know, we brought in strength coaches and you know, great physical therapists to make sure our guys are ready to play on Sunday. And he thinks about all that stuff. So, you know, he's been definitely, you know, one of the main factors in the success of the Rattlers.
Joe Windham joining us on the Brad Sesmatch Show. Jared Cohen filling in for Brad today. The president of the Rattlers gearing up for the Rattlers taking on the Portland Thunder in round one of the AFL playoffs. Nick Davila has been the face of the franchise now for a few years, but he has arguably had his best season yet. What have you seen just from we see the numbers, but from Davila the person this year, the leader, and the things that you see off the field and in practice and in meetings that people might not know about him that makes him the special player that he is?
Well, I think first and foremost, he's just a good person, you know, personally, and all of our guys are. And one of the things that Kevin does is he recruits on character. You know, if you come in and we see all this stuff about all these guys doing things in different pro sports and you know, they become distractions and things like that, and if he feels a guy's poisoning the locker room, you know, he'll make a change. And Nick is the epitome of that. I mean, he's a leader. He's just a good person. He does so much work in the community. He's always involved, you know, with his players and talking to them. And you know, I get to see the game a little bit more when I go on the road because there's not as much work to do.
Sure.
And I get to see him, how no matter what happens, I've never seen anybody that's made a mistake and anybody else gets down on them. And Nick will go over there and pick him up. And, you know, so that kind of leadership you know, having confidence in people is tantamount to having a great team.
Now, the Auction Indian Community Field has become one of the best home field advantages in the AFL. Undefeated 9-0 at home this season, 38-5, including the playoffs since 2011. Just the atmosphere down there. It's 120 degrees outside. It's just, it's the thing to do. It's not even a question, and especially when it's the playoffs, right?
Yeah, you know, and this time of year, it's a really good thing. You know, you have football in the air conditioning, and you got, you know, stands that have beer and hot dogs. I mean, it doesn't get much better than that.
Absolutely not.
And you know, so you know, that's always a good thing this time of year.
Now, how can fans that are tuning in right now, what's the best way for them to go about snagging some tickets for this weekend's game?
Well, that's one thing too, is the fans are what make the Snake Pit, you know, a hard place to play. You know, Auction Indian Community Field has had some of the best, most passionate fans, and you've been there and you've heard the deafening, you know, screams when the other team's defense is out there. And so we want all the fans out there. And right now we have specials. We just launched on Ticketmaster.com. You can also call into our ticket office at 602-514-TDTD. And they have ways that you could actually see this game for free. And
oh, wow.
We're also selling tickets for next year for the season.
Very good. And before we let you go, thank you so much for joining us, Joe Windham, president of the Rattlers here on the Brad Sesmatch Show. Jared Cohen filling in for Brad. Let's look ahead to Portland a little bit. 3-0 against them this season, a new team in the AFL with some young players. The last game at Auction Indian Community Field was a little closer than the first two. But what can you tell us about this matchup with this team and what the Rattlers need to do to maintain their success to make it 4 in a row against the Thunder this weekend?
Well, you know, it's always hard, and you kind of said it right there, is 4 games. It's pretty tough to play a team 4 times and not, you know, have everything out there. So, you know, I think Coach is going to have some surprises and some changes. And, you know, and the thing about it, you know, they're an expansion team, and they've really got nothing to lose. You know, nobody even picked them to be in the playoffs, so they can come out here and just shoot from the hip and play with reckless abandon. So that's always a dangerous thing. So, you know, I think the biggest thing is, and I know Kevin will have them, just, you know, we go in, we do our game plan, and we execute it, and that's going to be what it takes to win.
Joe, thank you so much for your time. Looking forward to seeing you on Sunday, and looking forward to a victory on Sunday as well.
All right, Jared. Thanks a lot, man. I appreciate it.
Of course. That's Joe Windham joining us on the Brad Sesmatch Show, Sports360AZ.com, AZ Central Sports, and White Mountain Radio. More on the Brad Sesmatch Show. Don't go anywhere. Sports360AZ.com, AZ Central Sports, White Mountain Radio. My name is Jared Cohen, filling in for Brad Sesmatch today on the show. You can follow me on Twitter. Like to cover all sorts of different things around the Valley and the statewide as well. We do a lot with high school sports. The Recruiting Roundup is a very popular segment I do every week with Scout.com's Jason Jewell, a friend of the company. We've done a great job. Been with him for over a year and a half now doing this, and it's just taken off. Also do a lot on the college front. ASU and U of A kick off their camps today, as a matter of fact, leading up to the 2014 season. Thanks a lot to Chris Cartman, who joined us a couple segments ago, and also thanks last segment to Joe Windham for joining us, the president of the Rattlers, leading up to a exciting time as the Rattlers are once again back in the playoffs. Yes, they've dropped 3 out of 4 to close out the season, but they started 14-0, and they are just as good as that record. It was definitely not a fluke. Caught all the home games this year. I'm telling you, it's not a fluke. So looking forward to that game as well. Going to talk right now a little MLB trade deadline. Went down yesterday. 1 p.m. Arizona time was when the deadline officially occurred, even though teams still, by some weird roundabout way, are still able to make trades without and send players to other teams without any interference from a third-party team. So it's very bizarre on how that works. You'd have to really dive into the rule book to see how it works specifically. I really don't have the energy to do that. Maybe someone out there in radio land or internet land, as we do on Sports360AZ, can do that for me. And you could tweet me about that at Jared_Sports360. But technically, the trade deadline ended yesterday. Diamondbacks trade Martin Prado to the Yankees, Gerardo Parra to the Brewers. Weeks back, before the deadline, they traded Brandon McCarthy also to the Yankees for Fidel Nuno, who has just been okay since he's come over, better than nothing, I guess. And they also traded Joe Thatcher as well as Tony Campana to the Angels and received a prospect in return, an outfield prospect who I really like a lot, Zach Borenstein, who has also gotten off to a very good start in the Diamondback system in Mobile to get things started. You can check out Sports360AZ.com and did a write-up about the prospects that the Diamondbacks got in return from these trades, not just the ones yesterday, but the ones that have just happened during the season. I like to monitor every week on my D-backs on Deck blog the top 20 prospects in the system, their progression throughout the year, different notes about them. I have frequent contact with the director of player development, Mike Bell. Talk to him all the time, shoot him emails about information about injuries and statuses of players and his thoughts. We talk quite frequently. He gives me some notes. I throw that into the blog very often, so you could check out, and I'll include some of the players that the Diamondbacks acquired in the trades yesterday. Let's look more national now. And so John Lester traded from the Boston Red Sox to the Oakland A's. The A's, Billy Bean, does something that we are just not really used to him doing. Basically buys a player for 2.5 months or so, maybe 3 if they make it to the World Series. And they are good enough to do so. As a result, the Red Sox acquire Yonis Cespedes, the 2-time home run Derby champion, the cleanup hitter for the A's, and maybe a lot of people are like, why would they trade their cleanup hitter? Here's an epidemic involving, and I'll bring you in this, Jordy, Jordy Hamm, filling in a producer for Eric Sorensen. The epidemic of both the trades yesterday. Also, David Price traded from Tampa Bay to Detroit, acquired some, you know, good players in return, and Drew Smyly and Nick Franklin, but not great. But the reason why they traded these guys, even though both teams didn't have to trade Cespedes and Price, but they did because they're small market teams that aren't going to be able to afford the guys in a year or two. That's why they made those deals at the end of the day, to try to acquire prospects at their height of value. And I find that kind of sad. I find that it's the part of baseball that I think is frustrating, because there is no salary cap. That's why those deals were made. And now these teams are behemoths, if you will, especially when you look at the Tigers' rotation.
Yeah, absolutely. And you look at the A's, usually what they'll do is deal one of their big-name guys in return for prospects. In this case, it was John Lester that they were able to bring back. But yeah, that's definitely been a trend in terms of these smaller markets. It seems like the big guns, the Yankees, the Red Sox, the Tigers as of late, have definitely gone through and just tried to, you know, pick the big players off. And, you know, it's kind of the running joke with the Marlins, where you see, okay, when's Jose Fernandez going to get dealt? When's Giancarlo Stanton going to get dealt?
Just a matter of time.
Yeah.
So you look at all this, and from the A's standpoint, not actually from the Red Sox standpoint, okay, I thought the Red Sox were the winners yesterday, and I tweeted that even before everything was set in stone. They were the winners because they trade John Lackey, who's an aging starter, who's good maybe 3 out of every 5 starts, and in those 2 other starts gets absolutely demolished and can barely get through 5 innings. He's an older player, costs a ton of money. The Red Sox able to trade him to the Cardinals for Alan Craig, who I like a lot, and was it Joe Kelly? Joe Kelly was the other pitcher, who's kind of a one-time elite prospect who's just turned okay for the Cardinals. So the Red Sox add 2 good performers for an aging starter who has really no value to them as they're trying to turn things around. They acquire Yonis Cespedes, who they can afford to pay a long-term contract in a year and a half. There's talks that John Lester is just going to turn around and re-sign with the Red Sox after he's done with whatever he has to do with the A's. So they're in a position where they're adding very good talent to their team and could in return still sign and make the big deals that they've done in the past to turn this thing around in a very, very quick hurry while acquiring some elite prospects at the same time.
Yeah, absolutely. And you take a look at, you know, the corner outfield positions. You have Cespedes coming in. Now Alan Craig, he can also play first base if Napoli is struggling. He can also, you know, DH, you know, fill in for David Ortiz, that sort of thing. So I really like the versatility that they brought in terms of the Cardinals. I think Joe Kelly, he's on the verge of being a good rotation guy. He had a pretty good run in the playoffs last year with the Cardinals.
He did.
But in terms of like a long reliever, I don't think there would be many better options out there. I think that he could really bring some versatility. And, you know, they were rumored to be sellers, but they're definitely, yes, they did sell off Lester, but like you said, he may come right back. But they definitely set themselves up nicely for next year.
I think they did a fantastic job yesterday. And the A's, I thought the A's would have been fun to watch all year. I thought the Samardzija trade was fantastic for them and also fantastic for the Cubs. Man, the Cubs, you want to talk about a farm system. Chicago Cubs. Yes, the Chicago Cubs are going to have some marquee talent making their way up the pine. Already have this year with some of the players they've brought up, but next year and the year after as well with Addison Russell and Chris Bryant just waiting in the rings. Let's get back local here. Diamondbacks. Now, there was a quote, and I'll play this here from Kevin Towers in a second, that really stood out to me about the Diamondbacks and the deals that they did not make. And they have depth in the bullpen. That's seen. We saw that with Joe Thatcher being traded. Brad Ziegler, according to many reports, was one of the hottest commodities that the Diamondbacks had to trade. Not necessarily Martin Prado or Gerardo Parra or even Aaron Hill, who had been mentioned but did not get traded. Everyone other than Paul Goldschmidt was said to be on the block. And Brad Ziegler looked for a lot of the contending teams to be the one with the most value. He was not traded. Here is what Kevin Towers had to say yesterday about not dealing some of these guys in the bullpen.
We don't want to embarrass ourselves the rest of the season, too, and you have to have a good pen to win those games you're supposed to win. And we got lots of hits on those guys, but there wasn't a deal that presented itself that we felt was worthy of moving, you know, a Ziggy or an Ollie Perez. It's not to say that we won't get hits after this, but we want to keep those guys intact.
He used a word that I just can't help but smile about: embarrassed. He didn't want to be embarrassed. I find it very odd that you feel like Kevin Towers, and I could be completely ignorant in my saying this and could be completely off base, but this is just from my standpoint. You feel like you didn't want to be embarrassed by trading a bullpen player like a Brad Ziegler or Oliver Perez, who have been, for the most part, guys that have traveled all over the place and couldn't find homes long-term. I like Brad Ziegler a lot. I think he's a very good pitcher, a great seventh or eighth inning guy, and a great guy, too. How many baseball players or professional players at that would spend opening day bringing your wife and your newborn baby onto the field to take pictures? That is a testament of a very good man. But as I mentioned at the top of the show, Gerardo Parra is a good guy and a fan favorite, too. But it's time to see him go. But you're embarrassed about not wanting to trade those guys, but aren't embarrassed about trading Martin Prado, who is the focal point of the Justin Upton trade. You're not embarrassed about some of these other deals that you've made involving bringing in Mark Trumbo for Tyler Skaggs, who's had a very good year, even though he's kind of flatlined a little bit, or trading a Trevor Bauer that looks better with every single start. You're not embarrassed by those trades and seeing the players that have come back and have not panned out whatsoever, and you're thinking about your bullpen and the fact that guys that who aren't even your closer and that have value could be embarrassing if you trade them in the end. Now, if you're getting nothing for them in return, I get where you can be embarrassed. But if it's the guy that has the most value on your club at the trade deadline, like a Brad Ziegler, I don't understand why that could be embarrassing. And I'm very perplexed by that. I don't understand that. I can't level with that. The Justin Upton trade was embarrassing. Yes, you got Nick Ahmed back, who's starting to flash some signs of being an everyday player at the next level in his time since he's been called up. Yes, you got arguably one of the best players in minor league baseball this season at third base in Brandon Drury, who's been putting up amazing numbers this year, just so happened to get called up today to Mobile. But the focal point of that trade was Martin Prado, the third baseman of the future for this team. The grit guy, the grinder that you wanted to build this team around and make the face of the franchise or the identity of this team. He was just dealt after a year and a half, and you think trading Brad Ziegler is embarrassing. If you want to use the word embarrassed, it's trading Martin Prado yesterday for the second best catching prospect in the Yankees organization. That's kind of embarrassing. You trade Ian Kennedy for Matt Stites. You essentially traded who did the Diamondbacks trade in that Yankees deal back in the day, which acquired Ian Kennedy. Who was it? That was Max Scherzer. Max Scherzer. You has traded Max, the Diamondbacks, I'm sorry, Kevin Towers did it. The Diamondbacks traded Max Scherzer basically for Ian Kennedy. In turn, Kevin Towers inherits Ian Kennedy and gets Matt Stites, who's been an okay player in the bullpen for the Diamondbacks. Maybe he has some closer potential, but at best, he's probably going to be a setup guy. That's really the nature of it. You turned Max Scherzer, Cy Young Award winner, into setup guy at the big league level. That's embarrassing. Not trading Brad Ziegler for some sort of talent in return. So I really think, on my long tangent here, and I'm probably going to get crushed for this at times for taking a shot at Kevin Towers and what the Diamondbacks have done, but I don't care because I look at it as this team is all they're doing right now, and some fellow colleagues in the sports media industry made note of this yesterday, where the Diamondbacks have basically spent 2014 as sellers, basically undoing the mistakes they made in 2013. Brandon McCarthy is gone. Martin Prado is gone. Joe Thatcher is gone. And now you look at players that could be gone in the very near future on that list as well, that could be gone because, like I mentioned at the top of the segment, trade deadline doesn't really end yesterday at 1 p.m. It still goes through back channels and different ways of going about trades. That's really the extent of my tangent. I don't know if you have anything you want to add to that, Jordan. I don't know if you have your thoughts and opinions about the embarrassing comment and the other things the Diamondbacks have done.
Well, I just think that they're trying to set up for the future, and I think the one word that you use that I totally agree with is value. I think there is some value in the bullpen that you can trade away. And, you know, KT did say that it didn't happen now, but maybe down the road they may be approached by a team that may make a deal. But I think that there definitely is some value in that bullpen. And hopefully they explore that if a team does approach them and say, hey, let's, you know, let's take a look at a guy like Ziegler or something like that, at where they can get some value back. Hopefully they do explore that.
Absolutely. That's Jordan Hamm. He's been filling in for Eric Sorensen the past 3 weeks now, holding it down. Show hasn't been a train wreck or anything like that, so he must be doing something right. That's we appreciate what he's been doing over the last few weeks. Jared Nielsen behind the glass, always holding it down. He's the one that keeps us all in check. Really quick, before we call it quits here, Roger Goodell, the commissioner of the NFL, spoke about the Ray Rice suspension, which has been a hot topic. He basically stands by the 2-game suspension as opposed to the 4-game suspension for all the marijuana users and even the year-long suspension for some of the marijuana users out there. A lot of that's come with a lot of fire and scrutiny, basically insinuating that the NFL has harsher punishments for drug users and guys getting a little high than they do guys beating their fiancés, soon-to-be wives. I had a big problem with that. I know Brad has talked about that to the upteenth degree. So I'm not going to get into that much further. He said everything I agree with, but Roger Goodell did speak today and talked about how he stands by the decision of the 2-game suspension. And I'm not really surprised by that. Why would he change at the end of the day? You make a decision, you stand by it, and you hold your ground. Sports360AZ.com, lots around the Diamondbacks trades and their prospects. Check that out. Jared Cohen filling in for Brad Sesmat today, also on White Mountain Radio and AZ Central Sports.